Hello, I'm Don Machholz. This is Looking Up with Don, podcast episode one for the week of January 8th, 2020. The related website for this podcast is donmachholz.com. That is spelled donmachholz.com, two H's. So what's up in the sky this week? In the evening, if you go out and face the east, you'll see a rather bright moon, and it reaches full moon phase this Friday, January 10th. This gives us a great opportunity this week for imaging or visually observing moonrise over the hills, ocean, trees, desert, or city landscape, depending upon your location. Over the years, I've found it rather exciting to watch the moon rise over the distant horizon. It looks good through the telescope, it looks good through binoculars, and it looks good with the unaided eye. It's really a nice sight to see as the moon silently rises over your distant horizon. The moon moves fairly slowly. It moves its diameter in about 2 minutes' time. Coinciding with the full moon this Friday, we're going to have an eclipse, a penumbral eclipse. It's not a major eclipse, but the moon will darken slightly as it moves through the outer portion of the Earth's shadow. It will be visible to half the Earth, as are all lunar eclipses. In this case, it will be visible from Asia, Europe, and parts of Australia and Africa. Let's just briefly discuss lunar eclipses. As the Earth goes around the Sun, the Earth is casting a shadow out into space in the opposite direction from the Sun. Now the Moon goes around the Earth, and it passes through that region each month. Most of the time it will pass north or south of the Earth's shadow. At the distance of the Moon, the Earth's shadow is about 1.3 degrees across, while the Moon is a half a degree across. Now, when the moon passes right through the center of the Earth's shadow, we have what's known as a total lunar eclipse. Seen from the moon, the Earth is blocking all of the sun, and the only sunlight that strikes the moon is sunlight that is bent by the Earth's atmosphere, so the moon will appear red or orange during a total lunar eclipse. The type of an eclipse we're having this week, however, the moon doesn't pass through the center of the Earth's shadow, but toward the outside. Seen from the moon, only a portion of the sun will be covered by the Earth. Therefore, the moon will not get very dim, and in fact, the casual observer might not even know that there's a lunar eclipse going on during the time that the moon is in the Earth's outer shadow. Now this year, we do not have any total lunar eclipses, but we do have three more eclipses such as this one, a penumbral lunar eclipse. Now the other three eclipses will be in early June, early July, and late November. The one in June will be visible from Africa and Southern Asia. The one in July will be visible in most of North and Southern America. And the last one of the year, in late November, will be visible to all of North America and parts of Asia. We will discuss these lunar eclipses in future podcasts. So what else can you see in the evening sky this week? Well, if you go out and face toward the southwest, you'll see the planet Venus. Venus will appear as a bright star-like object. And it goes through phases, much like our moon, which you can see through a telescope. Venus will be in our evening sky for the next 5 months. In the east, you'll find the constellation Orion rising. And while you're at it, take a special look at the star Betelgeuse, the bright star in the northeast corner of the constellation. That is, as a constellation rises, it's the lower left bright star. It is a variable star, and over the last few months, this star has been getting much dimmer than usual. In fact, some people are suggesting that it might even supernova, that is, explode, although the chances of that happening at any particular time is extremely, extremely small. Orion's one of the most popular constellations in the sky, and in my many years of stargazing, I've never seen Betelgeuse to be this faint. Now, this red giant is 600 light years away, and it's large. It's so large that if it was in the place of our sun, the planets Mercury, Venus, Earth, and Mars would be in it. And it would be really hot here on the Earth. Now, one theory as to why it's dimming so much is that this star seems to go through a couple different types of cycles as it brightens and dims. One cycle is 5.9 years, and the other is 425 days. One of the theories then is that these two cycles are superimposing upon themselves, and they're both reaching minimum at perhaps the same time. So get out in the evening sky and take a good look at Betelgeuse. It will probably never be this faint in your lifetime. In the morning sky, we have a unique opportunity to observe the red planet Mars north and a few degrees away from the star Antares. Now, Mars is slightly fainter than the star Antares, but give them a look and compare the colors of the two. The Greek name Antares means rival of Mars. So what do you think? Are they similar in color? These two objects are not up all night. They rise in the southeast about 2.5 hours before sunrise. You don't even need to leave the house for this one. Just get to an east or south-facing window about an hour before dawn and see what you can see. Okay, Betelgeuse, Antares, I think we've talked enough about red stars for this podcast. The sun reached its closest point to the Earth on January 5th. That's when the Earth was moving at its fastest speed around the sun. Since that date, we've been slowing down. Do you feel it? I don't. This week, the International Space Station can be seen in the morning sky in the Northern Hemisphere. Southern Hemisphere observers can see the International Space Station in the evening sky this week. It will appear as a slow-moving, bright, star-like object, and it's generally visible for several minutes as it glides across the sky, generally from west to east. You can find out exactly where and when it will be visible from your location by going to the website heavens-above.com. Enter your location and find out where and when to see it. Once again, that website for finding where you can see the satellites is heavens-above.com. There's two upcoming star parties next month. First, the Southern Cross Astronomical Society has the Winter Star Party in the Florida Keys, and that will be held February 17th to 23rd. There's still time to register for this star party. It is one of the more popular star parties of the year where astronomers get together and look at the sky. You can set up along the water and you have warm winter nights for your observing. And during the day you have speakers give talks on various topics. I went to this particular star party in 2005 and gave a talk about my comet hunting program. And at that time, my 10th comet, 2004 Q2, was visible in the evening sky. Another star party coming up next month is hosted by the Las Vegas Astronomical Society, Las Vegas, Nevada, and they host the Death Valley Star Party, February 21st and 22nd. Now, this star party is free, and it's open to the public. This is an opportunity to both show the sky to the general public, and then after they leave, you can spend your time with the other astronomers viewing a lot of things under the dark skies of Death Valley. This week we have an activity or a challenge you can try if you can get out sometime during this week. This is the Naked Eye Challenge. See if you can trace out the square of Pegasus. It's high in the evening sky. It's made up of four moderately bright stars forming a square about 15 degrees on each side. If you go to my website, donmacholtz.com, you'll find a star map pointing out where the square of Pegasus is. The way to use this star map is to print it out. Then you go outside and you face south and you hold it over your head. The objects on the star map will correspond more or less with the objects in the sky. This particular star map is made for mid-northern latitudes. It's made for this week, and it's made for about an hour and a half, 2 hours after sunset. Under those conditions, if you face south, hold the map over your head, the objects in the map will more or less match up with the objects in the sky. Now, we have a binocular challenge this week, too, and that is to watch the moon rise through binoculars. We talked about it earlier in the podcast. This Friday, when the moon is full, it will be rising at about the same time the sun is setting. It will be rising then about an hour later each night. Get outside with a pair of binoculars and watch the moon rise. This will take a few minutes for it to move its diameter, about 2 minutes. During that time, watch how it rises. It's a very exciting event to watch. And with binoculars, some people have noticed a 3D effect. See if you can see that three-dimensional effect looking at the moon rise through binoculars. Now, if you have a telescope, here's a project I'm suggesting for this week, and that is to view the star Castor. Now, the star Castor is one of the two brightest stars in the constellation Gemini, and Gemini is rising in the evening a little bit after sunset. It should be high enough that you can see it well. You can go to my website, donmockles.com. The star map you download will also have the star Castor identified. Of the two bright stars in the constellation Gemini, Castor is the first one to rise. Pollux is the second one. And the way I remember it is, in the alphabet, C comes before P. Castor rises first. Now, Castor is actually a multiple star system made up of six stars. Through a telescope of at least 3 inches in diameter, at least 100 power, you should be able to split the star Castor into its two main components. They're separated by only about 6 arc seconds, and the magnitudes of brightness is 1.9 and 3.0. Once again, through most small telescopes at fairly high magnification, see if you can split the star Castor into its two components. In the morning sky last week, we had the first major meteor shower of the year, the Quadratids. They peaked on Saturday, January the 4th. The peak of this shower lasts only a few hours, so if you didn't get out that night, you missed most of the show. I was out for that time of the peak and for the next 90 minutes, and I saw only 7 quads. Much of the eastern United States was clouded out. It now appears that the peak of the shower came a couple hours earlier than predicted, and the shower was weaker than expected. Meteor showers are generally caused by particles from a comet. As a comet orbits the sun, on some occasions we will pass through the trail of material left behind by the comet. Not all comets produce meteor showers, but for many of the meteor showers we observe, the parent comet, the comet responsible for the meteor shower, has been identified by astronomers. Now, the meteor particles for the quads appear to originate from an asteroid. That asteroid is known as Asteroid 2003 EH1. Now, for some time, it was believed that a comet, which I discovered in 1986, known today as P96/Machholz, was fully and solely responsible for this meteor shower. But now astronomers believe it is the asteroid. But the asteroid may be related to Comet 96P, and it's part of something known as the Machholz complex. The Machholz complex is a series of comet groups, 8 meteor showers, and at least 1 asteroid, all related to the comet I found in 1986. A study published in October 2016 and entitled Formation and Past Evolution of the Meteoroid Complex of Comet 96P Machholz suggests that the main shower, the one seen on January 4th each year, is produced from particles of the asteroid 2003 EH1. But it goes on to say that a more broad meteor shower, centered on the same date but with fewer numbers and lasting several weeks, is directly from Comet 96P. That's on page 53 of the report. The study is 253 pages, so I'm not going to read it to you here on this podcast, but you can find it on my website. This week's fun fact. Although Castor is referred to as the alpha star in the constellation Gemini, indicating it's the brightest star in Gemini, it is not. It's actually the second brightest star in that constellation. It's slightly fainter than the star Pollux. So why was it named Alpha and not Beta? One explanation is that one or both changed in brightness since they were assigned the Alpha and Beta designations by Johann Bayer, a German astronomer, some 300 years ago. Another explanation is that since Castor rises first, he gave it the Alpha symbol, as he did for the stars of Orion, which suffers the same problem with its two brightest stars. Once again, the related website for this podcast is donmacholz.com. That is spelled donmacholz.com. God willing, I'll be back next week for another episode of Looking Up with Don. We will discuss, among other things, the Starlink satellites, and we will be counting stars. Thank you for listening. See the sky this week? I'll see you next week.